say that I'm here to talk about the Sexual Acquisition and Transmission of HIV Cooperative Agreement Program, SACAP, another title that was too long, so in trying to figure out how to fit all of that on one slide, I decided to choose just one. Our cooperative study is a study that involves funding from the National Institute on Drug Abuse. Our partners are RAND Corporation, RTI, UCLA, UIC, Biomedical Center in St. Petersburg, Russia, and Yale. Okay, SACAP is examining the role of drug use in the sexual transmission of HIV. The study was initiated and funded by the National Institute on Drug Abuse to examine the transmission of HIV among and from drug-using to non-drug-using populations. Specifically, we seek to determine the role of drug use in the sexual transmission of HIV, and particularly to identify bridge populations from drug users to non-drug users. The study was motivated by this pink line here that you can see in the chart from CDC, this pink line here, that describes the increase in high-risk heterosexual contact cases of HIV/AIDS from 1986 to 2005, and you can see that the increase is very steady. And also, in looking at the proportion of HIV/AIDS cases among adults and adolescents by sex and transmission category, this is from 2005, in particular you see in females that 80% of the cases in females are attributed to high-risk sexual heterosexual contact as well as to injection drug use. And in men, the cases are attributed, of course, to MSMs, high-risk heterosexual contact, and injection drug users. So this study will be looking at these populations here and these populations right here. Over 6,000 participants, we've had over 6,000 SACAP participants to date. Our Wave 1 participants totaled 3,269, and those are the participants I'll be describing briefly today. We also have Wave 2 currently in the field, and while it says 2,770, I believe that now we're up to 3,200 and something, so it's a growing sample. We're recruiting a dual risk group. We're looking at MSMs and drug users simultaneously in our respondent-driven sampling approach. The drug users are defined as cocaine or crack users, heroin users, methamphetamine users, and injection drug users in the past 6 months. And men who have sex with men are defined as those who are engaging in anal sex in the past 6 months, men who are engaging in anal sex with another man in the past 6 months. We have a second, and that sample is being recruited using respondent-driven sampling, and I'll be describing that a little bit in the next few slides. We have a secondary sample of sexual partners and a tertiary sample of partners of partners that we recruit off of the main core RDS sample using snowball sampling. So just to give you a little overview of it, we're recruiting the two groups and looking for the overlap between the two groups. And actually, most of the MSMs are also drug users, so that circle, can we go back? Okay. Yeah, so this circle here actually extends into the MSM circle considerably. From that core group of drug users and MSMs, we're recruiting sexual partners. And from the sexual partners, we're recruiting partners of partners. And one of the things that I want to point out is that actually, as we're recruiting sexual partners, we found that most of the sexual partners being recruited fit into one of these two categories. We had four different cities in the study using one common method. In St. Petersburg, the PIs are Robert Heimer at Yale and Andrei Kozlov at the Biomedical Center. In Los Angeles, the PIs at UCLA were Stephen Shaptop, Amina Gorbach. Chicago, PI was Larry Ouellette at University of Illinois Chicago. In Raleigh-Durham, PI was Bill Zuhl, and I run the Scientific Coordinating Center at the RAND Corporation along with Sandy Berry. Respondent-driven sampling is used widely to recruit hidden populations such as drug users and men who have sex with men. It's a variant of chain referral sampling. You start with non-randomly selected seeds, and those individuals receive two incentives to participate. They get a direct payment for participation, and they also get reimbursed for referring others. And if those other individuals participate, then they receive a an additional payment. Recruitment continues over multiple waves, and for example, in our Chicago study, this is what the chains end up looking like. If you start from this individual right here, you can see that the chains out from that individual. And they have a limited number of coupons that they can give out, and those individuals recruit other individuals who keep right on going out. So we have here about four different recruitment chains that radiate out in multiple directions. And to organize that a little bit for you, this is the UCLA recruitment. You can see that by starting with a single individual and going by a wave of recruitment downward, you can see how these the sample radiates into eventually what we consider the sort of general population space down here in the giant component. What we found in our respondent-driven sampling approach, looking for drug users and men who have sex with men, is, I think, a rather interesting population. What we got were older, lower socioeconomic status African Americans in the United States. They, by older, I mean that in the 40s, 42 through 41, 42, 43 in our three U.S. cities. As you can see in St. Petersburg in Russia, the epidemic we tapped into was a much younger population, 29 years old, with many years of injection drug use, actually. And it's in the United States, we also found that it was a predominantly African-American sample. In Los Angeles, we had about 25% Hispanic as well, and also in Chicago is about 25% Hispanic. It was also a predominantly disabled and unemployed population, and we had quite a bit of homelessness. And again, it was very different in Russia, where we found that it was a much younger epidemic and that, in general, there were slightly higher socioeconomic status than what we found in the U.S. sample. The really interesting part of the population that we found to be totally unexpected was the percentage of men who have sex with men and women that we recruited into the sample. 31% of the LA sample, of the total LA sample, 11% of the total Chicago sample, and 13% of the Raleigh-Durham sample reported having sex with men and women. Now this population was a predominantly African-American, non-gay identified population of individuals. 18% seroprevalence was found to be in Russia. It was predominantly in the injection drug users. In our U.S. sites, we found the highest seroprevalence in the men who have sex with men. These were typically drug-using men who have sex with men. Did not include the MSMWs. And here in the drug users, we're talking about those not. These do not include the men who have sex with men, as well as the IDUs. But you can see 60% in Los Angeles, 27% in Chicago, 34% in Raleigh-Durham were HIV positive. In St. Petersburg, half of our injection drug users were reported being seropositive, or were found to be seropositive. The MSMWs tended to match their seroprevalence to the drug-using populations and not to the MSM populations. So you can see the HIV seroprevalence rates were about what the drug user rates were. To date, we've interviewed over 6,000, as I've said, of drug users and their sexual partners. In the U.S., our dual population RDS sampling approach resulted in a predominantly minority, largely homeless and unemployed disabled sample. It also resulted in the recruitment of a large number of bisexual stimulant-using, primarily crack cocaine-using, African-American men whose role as a potential bridge group requires our attention. I think that one of the biggest things that we found with our RDS sampling is that it went really into the low-income population. In Los Angeles, for example, much of the recruitment came right out of Skid Row. And one of the things that we had a lot of difficulty with is penetrating that that socioeconomic barrier and getting into any of the different populations of drug users and MSMs that we had anticipated running into. The contrasts were also interesting. In St. Petersburg, the recruited sample is much younger, and the seroincidence and prevalence in St. Petersburg also was really quite striking. There, it looks like the epidemic is really on the up, upside and incidence rates extremely high. I really do encourage you to go to, I should note that this presentation was originally the introduction to a symposium that we had submitted. All of the talks from that symposium were accepted to APHA, and we're all in different sessions. And so I'm introducing all of the, I'm the introduction to Wade Ivey's talk today, as well as to several in sessions tomorrow, 5173 and 5174. Fortunately, we're competing against each other as well. So I encourage you to go hear those talks, but one of the things that you'll hear is how very high the seroincidence rates are in St. Petersburg. There's a tremendous need, obviously, for interventions and infrastructure development there. And our data certainly suggests that while the epidemic is perhaps a bit more mature and not where the seroincidence isn't quite as high, we do see that this population of bisexual African Americans are certainly engaging in extremely high-risk behaviors. There's quite a bit of HIV still there, and it's certainly a population that we want to take a closer look at. I want to acknowledge all of our collaborators in the study, and I want to thank you very much.